you go to gracelifebiblechurch.com, you can scroll down to the entry for today, October 29. Click on that, and then you will be able to load the notes here that we're going to be following in class. So, what our topic is, if you look at the title, this is Lesson 214, the 1611, Examining the Marginal Notes, Complete and Partial Verse Rewrites. We're going to be talking about something today that's probably not the most, it might be a controversial topic for those who are, you know, really hardcore. What I mean by that is very King James only in their approach to things. We're going to be talking, not that you guys know I'm a King James advocate, but I don't subscribe to all the reasoning of some of the King James only arguments. And one of this issue of the marginal notes is going to be one of those issues, I think, as we get into this. So I'm a King James Version defender. I use it exclusively, but I don't buy all of the bad arguments that have been used in its defense. So let's look at this topic, complete and partial verse rewrite. So the introduction. In Lesson 212, we surveyed a couple different approaches to understanding different approaches or understandings of the marginal notes found in the Authorized Version of 1611. After reviewing the content of previous lessons regarding the marginal notes, we discussed new material under the heading Types of Marginal Notes. Using the report of translator Samuel Ward gave to the Synod of Dort in 1618, we presented the following breakdown. Okay? So number one, you have the dagger symbol, and this equals literal translations. Okay? And what Samuel Ward said about that at the Synod of Dort, so we've triangulated the marginal markings with statements that were made by Samuel Ward, which you can read about in Pollard's book, page 339. He said, fourthly, the more difficult Hebraisms and Grecisms were consigned to the margin. So when you encounter the dagger symbol, it is indicative of more literal translations of the Hebrew and Greek. So we went over this before. The second are the two vertical lines, and these equal what we call alternative English readings or renderings. So look at that statement underneath there. Thirdly, where a Hebrew or Greek word admits two meanings of a suitable kind, the one was to be expressed in the text and the other in the margin. The same to be done where a different reading was found in good copies. Then I have a bracketed insertion here. Caution needs to be exercised when it comes to the second category identified by Samuel Ward. First, the number of marginal notes that fits this category is very small. Second, the King James translators were noting variant readings in their Reformation-era source text is not the same thing as the modern practice of textual criticism. So there are two functions of the double vertical lines. They are also that the main purpose is to signify an alternative English rendering, and then sometimes we'll look at this next week. It was to note some sort of a variance in the source text that the translators were using. And then thirdly, we have the asterisk, which was used to denote or signify cross-references, and what Samuel Ward said about that. Secondly, no notes were to be placed in the margin, but only parallel passages to be noted. So you have the three functions of the marginal notes. Literal translations with the dagger, alternative English readings with the double vertical lines, and an asterisk for cross-references, okay? So, in this lesson, we want to consider examples of footnotes found in the AV. Now, in the last lesson I taught, lesson 213, we looked at how the King James translators mitigated against political and partisan notes that were in the Geneva Bible. We went over that in lesson 213. Remember from past lessons that one of the main reasons why King James objected to the Geneva Bible was he did not like the political marginal notes that were against divine right of kings. Okay, and so when he authorized this project in 1604 at the Hampton Court Conference, he was very specific that he did not want those types of notes in the Bible. And so in our previous lesson, 213, we looked at those partisan and political notes. Okay. In this lesson, we want to consider examples of footnotes found in the AV. So we want to actually look at some examples. So I'd like to begin by surveying two chapters, one from each testament, in which the marginal notes are particularly dense. So we're going to look at an Old Testament sample and a New Testament sample in this lesson. I've chosen Genesis 1 and Romans 1 for the purposes of this exercise. Secondly, we want to look at verses that are completely rewritten in the marginal notes. So that would be a verse that has a, basically an alternative rendering in the margin for the entire verse. Okay? Thirdly, in the next lesson, so that'll be in lesson 215, we want to look at marginal notes that could be indicative of textual variants in the source text used by the King James Version translators. And lastly, we'll consider random marginal notes of interest. So we're going to look at unicorns, behemoth, leviathan. We're going to look at Lucifer in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 12. A couple notes of interest that, listen, there's over 7,000 marginal notes, so I'm not going to teach every marginal note. So we're going to look at two samples. We're going to look at the stuff that really is important and look at some notes of interest, and then we'll draw some conclusion observations from having done that, okay? So for example, I've included a screenshot. For each example, I've included a screenshot from the 1611 along with a modern spelling transcription underneath each image. All told, we will consider the following categories. So Sylvia, we do need to, if you look at the screen here, I've kind of changed this a little bit to say all Old Testament sample chapter, Genesis 1, and then New Testament sample chapter, Romans 1. So we're going to look at Genesis 1 as a sample chapter. We're going to look at Romans 1 as a sample chapter. Then we're going to look at this topic of marginal verse rewrites. And there's two categories there, complete verse rewrites and partial verse rewrites. Next week, we'll look at the issue of textual variants and alternative textual readings. And then last, we'll look at just other notes of interest. Okay. Now, I want you to note here, though, on page 2, the bottom of the introduction, it says, please note for the purposes of this study, we are not looking at any of the cross-references marked with an asterisk. We're not going to look at any of those, okay? They are what they are. You would either agree or not whether or not it was an appropriate cross-reference. I'm not going to spend time looking at any of those, okay? So with that said, let's get to our first Old Testament sample chapter, Genesis 1, all right? So let's look at a couple things here. So look at Genesis 1:4. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And then you'll notice right here that there's a dagger, which then sends you to the margin to the dagger, and it says Hebrew between the light and the darkness. Okay? So the divided the light from the darkness. So they're saying that a more possibly literal Hebrew rendering of that would be between the light and the darkness. Okay, so that's a more literal translation of the Hebrew than what they put in the text. Does everybody see that? Okay, look at number 5, verse number 5. Okay, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. Notice the dagger. And the evening and the morning were the first day, is in the main body of the text. Then you come over here to the dagger in the margin, and we have another example of this Hebrew. And the evening was, and the morning was. So there is a more literal rendering of the Hebrew than what is in the text. So is everybody following how I have this set up? I have a screenshot from the text, and then underneath it I have the dagger, the verse number, the dagger, and then what the alternative was at the next dagger. Does everybody follow that format? Should be pretty self-explanatory. Now the reason I did that was just to, well, a few reasons. Number one, to make it reading it easier. And number two, just to document each one of these notes. So now look, we have a note in verse 4. We have a note in verse 5. Let's go to the next page. We have a note in verse 6. In verse 6. Notice what it says. So, and God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. So the asterisk here is indicative of a cross-reference. So we're not going to worry about that. But then notice the dagger here again. So if you look at your notes, the text said firmament, and then there is a more literal rendering of that, a Hebrew that says expansion. So we've got three daggers so far as we look at this. Then we got verse 11, same chapter. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth, and it was so. So here we have a dagger right here at grass. And so we could see that the alternative, or the more literal Hebrew rendering here is tender what? Tender grass. Okay, so all those daggers, again, are indicative of a more literal Hebrew rendering of the Hebrew words in question. The next one is verse 14. And God said, let there be lights. So notice the asterisk. You come over here, here's the cross references that they're saying are related to this verse. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and to and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. So we have a dagger here at why am I drawing a blank? The day and the night, okay? The day from the night, so you can see the dagger right here, the day from the night. If you look at the notes here, the more literal Hebrew rendering that they give in the margin is between the day and between the night. So, all those so far have just been more literal renderings of the Hebrew. Anybody got any questions so far? Let's go to verse 16, top page 4. Somebody said we got a lot of pages in the notes. Yeah, but most of them are pictures, okay? Verse 16. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night, and he made the stars also. Okay? Sometimes this gets a little blurry. Notice the dagger to rule the day, and then you have the more literal Hebrew here. So this would be in the margin, Hebrew for the rule of the day, etc. So again, this is a more literal rendering of the Hebrew than what they actually put in the text. Okay? So they're showing you sort of their work here and what they're doing.
In that verse that he made, is that supposed to be italicized, or because the font's different?
This would be Roman type. So that is the 1611 equivalent of italics.
Okay.
Remember we did talk about that in a previous lesson, but that's a good question. So he made here is Roman type. The rest of this is Gothic type. And this signifies in italics. That's the old way of doing italics. But that's what that is. Okay? And then we have verse 20, which is an interesting verse because there's three notes in this one verse. Okay? Notice, and God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature. Now here we have, notice, we have our first occurrence now of two vertical lines. So let's look at that first. So the two vertical lines, you come over here to the margin, and the alternative reading here is or creeping. So they have moving in the text, or creeping where? In the margin. Okay? So they're saying that's an alternative English rendering. And then you go on with the verse, life and moving creature that hath life, and fowl, right? That's fowl. That may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. All right. So then we have a dagger at life. You come over here. Let me scroll this up here. So here we have the first one. Life, dagger, Hebrew, soul. So they're saying soul is a more literal Hebrew what? Translation than life. Okay. And then you have the second one on open firmament right here. Here's the second dagger, open firmament of the heaven. The dagger says open firmament of heaven, and then in the margin they have face of the firmament of heaven. So that's a more literal Hebrew rendering than what is in the text. Okay? Now, so what do you make of this? So There are, I'm just going to say it this way because I'm not sure how else to say it. For some advocates of the King James, these type of marginal notes are going to be they're sort of an inconvenient truth. Because they reveal that the translators did not always dogmatize on a specific given word in the text. They're giving you sometimes alternatives, and this is exactly what they said they were going to do when we read the preface. Remember, Miles Smith said that sometimes it's unclear exactly what something could be, and so they would use the margin for laying out various senses, etc. So we've already looked at this, and we'll revisit that again at the end of this investigation. So we see here in Genesis chapter 1, let's go to the next page and look at there's more examples, I forgot. So there's a lot of examples here in Genesis chapter 1. Look at verse 28. Okay? And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Okay? So we have a dagger here at moveth. You come to the margin, and again, you have the alternative of what? Creepeth. All right? And then we have verse 29. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. Right? And then we have the dagger right here at bearing seed. And if you come over here to the margin, bearing seed is seeding seed, literally in Hebrew. Now, that doesn't necessarily make for good English, but you understand, seeding seed is sort of a more repetitive way of saying what? Bearing seed, right? If you're seeding seed, is the tree seeding its own seed? Is the idea there, okay? And then you have verse 30. What's that? So that could be a thing we need to fix. So we need to note that. It's bearing seed up here, though. See where the dagger is? Bearing seed. And then down here it says yielding seed. So nothing to fix. Genesis 1:30 then is the last verse here. Okay. Where in his life I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. Alright? Now, by the way, this word meat, he's talking here about every green herb for meat. So that tells you, is there an older meaning of the word meat that doesn't necessarily mean animal flesh?
Yeah.
It means any what?
Food.
Any food source. Okay? So there's a older meaning of the use of the word meat here than the way we typically use it today. Today, if we use the word meat, we're typically referring to what? The flesh of an animal that we're going to eat, a chicken, beef, whatever, okay? But obviously, in this context, he's talking about every green one, herb, shall be meat, or for meat. So obviously, he's just talking about food in a general sense. But notice there's a dagger at life. You come over to the margin here, and so the dagger is life, and on the margin, Hebrew, a living soul. Alright? So, if we look at the analysis on Genesis chapter 1, all told, there are 12 marginal notes found in Genesis chapter 1. The breakdown is as follows. There are 11 literal Hebrew translations signified by the dagger. Those would be in verse 4, verse 5, verse 6, verse 11, verse 14, verse 16, 2 and verse 20, 28, 29, and 30. So there are 11 alternate literal Hebrew translations in this one chapter given in the margin. And then there is one alternative English rendering signified by the double vertical lines at Genesis 1:20. So are the translators really going out of their way here to provide the reader with as much information about what they're doing as they can? All right. Now I think as we look at Romans chapter 1, we're going to see a different result. Now what I mean by that is, in Genesis 1, we saw mostly literal Hebrew translations in the margin with the dagger. I think you'll observe as we look at Romans chapter 1 as a second sample chapter, we're going to see the opposite, where we're going to see more double vertical lines or alternative English renderings than we do more literal Greek renderings. Let's see if that checks out. So Romans chapter 1, verse 4, okay? And declared to be the Son of God with power, according to the spirit of holiness, by the resurrection from the dead. Notice there's a dagger by declared, okay? You come over to the margin, and it says Greek determined. Determined, declared. They're saying the more literal Greek reading would be what? Determined. Alright? Verse 5. By whom we have received grace and apostleship, double vertical lines, for obedience to the faith among all nations for his name. So the double vertical lines here is at for obedience to the faith. You come over here and notice it says or what? Or to the obedience of faith. So they're suggesting this could be a different English rendering than what? This one. Is it essentially the same? There's no substantive difference in meaning between what the margin says there and what the main body of the text says. All right? Verse 9. For God is my witness, whom I serve, double vertical lines, with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. So the double vertical lines here is with my spirit in the gospel, and you come over here to the margin, in my spirit. So here's what the main body of the text says, with my spirit. The marginal reading says, in my spirit. So they're saying that's an alternative English what? Translation of it, alright? Verse 12. That is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith, both of you and me. Alright? And here we have the double vertical lines at with you. And then here we have, in the margin over here, we have with you in the text, or in you, in the margin. Alternative English rendering. Verse 13. Now I would not have you be ignorant, brethren, that oftentimes I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto, that I might have some fruit, double vertical lines, among you also, even as among other Gentiles. Okay? So you follow the double vertical lines of the text to the double vertical lines of the margin, and among you is in the text, the margin says, or in you. Among you or in you, fruit. They're saying that's a alternative English rendering. Verse 19, okay? Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, double vertical lines at them, for God hath showed it unto them. So, in them is where we have the double vertical lines in the text. You come over to the margin, double vertical lines, or to them. So, again, not really much of a difference there, but an alternative rendering nonetheless. Verse 20. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, double vertical lines, so that they are without excuse. Alright? So the vertical lines are at the phrase, so they are without excuse. You come over to the margin, and it says, that they may be without what? Excuse. Okay. Wait a minute now. So it looks to me like I'm missing a picture. So Sylvia, will you write down that I need to add a picture for Romans 1:28? I'm thinking what happened there is when I was formatting this, I accidentally deleted it.
No, this is Romans 1:28.
Which one?
The picture.
No.
No, it's 1:20. Okay. I'm missing the picture for Romans 1:28. At least I am on my, in this copy here. Yeah, it's missing. So I must have accidentally deleted it. I know I took it. I strictly remember looking at this one. But, so let's just note it. Again, we have alternative renderings there. To retain versus or to acknowledge. And then 128, a reprobate mind or a mind void of judgment. So they're saying this could be another rendering for a reprobate mind, a mind that doesn't have, that is devoid of judgment. Look at verse 31. Sorry that I accidentally got rid of that picture. Without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. Notice the double vertical lines at without natural affection. And they say here, or unsociable. So they're behaving in ways that are not accepted in society, is kind of what they're saying there, okay? Which is an interesting one to consider, considering what that passage is talking about, as far as human sexuality goes. Look at verse 32. And knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Double vertical lines at have pleasure in them, and the alternative or consent with them. So in other words, are they giving their approval to what they're doing? Okay? So let's look at the analysis here. So the analysis, all told, there are 12 marginal notes found in Genesis. That should be, we should restate Romans 1. That should not say Genesis 1. Romans 1, we need to fix that. The breakdown is as follows. There is one literal, that should say Greek, not Hebrew. There is one Greek, one literal Greek translation at Romans 1:4, and there are 10 alternative English renderings at Romans 1:5, 1:9, 12, 13, 19, 22, and 28, and then in 31, and that should say 32 at the end, not 31 twice. So sorry for the typing mistakes there, okay? But notice how Romans, so in Genesis 11, we saw more daggers, literal Hebrew renderings. In Romans 1, we only find one as it relates to one more literal Greek rendering. But then in Romans 11, or in Romans chapter 1, we see a lot more alternative English renderings than what we saw in Genesis chapter 1. Now, guys, why I did that was to give you just sort of a flavor and a sample of what's going on here. So imagine the entire Bible, the entire canonical Bible, Genesis through Malachi, Matthew through Revelation, and are you going to have just tons of marginal notes like this all through the 1611? And they're going to be of different kinds, and they're going to be for different purposes. Now, before we move on, does anybody have any questions about that before we try to tackle this last point? Now, if your modern printings of the King James, do they have all these marginal notes in them?
No.
No. So in order to see this, you literally have to go back and look at a 1611 or a facsimile reproduction of a 1611. So, now here's what happens. Modern version advocates, those who are critical of the King James, they'll point to these marginal notes and they'll say, see, the marginal notes in the King James do the same thing that marginal notes in the modern versions do. To which I would say, yeah, I'm not convinced, because none of these marginal notes that we've seen so far have they called into question whether a verse should be in the text. The answer to that is no. None of these that we've looked at so far have done that. They're simply giving more literal Hebrew or Greek renderings or more literal or alternative English renderings. Now here's the issue. You guys know in this class that I have spent a lot of time teaching you that I believe preservation does not require verbatim identicality of wording, right? Now, if you're going to be a verbatim identicalist, are these going to be a problem for you? They're going to be a problem for you because they're not verbatim identical, and the translators are giving you alternatives in the margin. And I would say, as far as I can tell, that the ones we've looked at so far are generally not substantive differences in meaning. They're simply alternative ways of saying what? The same thing. Is everybody with me so far? But if you're going to say, well, it has to say A and nothing else, it can't say anything else, then are these marginal notes going to be a problem for you? Okay? So now let's look at a category, the next category. Whoops. Which is what I'm calling marginal verse rewrites. Now, if the first category was a problem for some will no doubt lose their mind over what we're going to talk about now. Okay? Now look, I'm not covering this stuff to intentionally poke the bear. Okay? I'm not. I'm covering this stuff because it exists. It's a reality. It is a textual reality in the printed history of the King James that the translators did stuff like this. So it seems to me that you can either ignore it, stick your head in the sand and pretend like it doesn't exist, or you can call attention to it and think it through from a scriptural point, vantage point of reasoning through it. Okay? So I don't think that we do ourselves any good to just pretend like things aren't there. Now, what am I talking about? Let's look at this, okay? Marginal verse rewrites, bottom of page 8, if you're following along online. Calvin George's article, an exhaustive listing of the marginal notes in the 1611 edition of the King James Bible on the Literatura Baptista website, notes at least 9 entire verses were written in the marginal notes, okay? While failing to provide a list of examples. So this is the article I'm talking about. I've showed you guys this before, a few weeks back. It's this article right here, an exhaustive listing of the marginal notes. Right? In the front material, before he starts listing them out, he says right here, notice, at least 9 verses were rewritten in marginal notes, but he doesn't tell you what they were. So that means you have to now investigate the marginal notes to find these instances where they gave it verse rewrites in the margin. Back to the notes. Our friend and fellow researcher Alex Hanna provided me with a list of examples in 2 categories. Number 1, complete verse rewrites, and number 2, partial verse rewrites, i.e. verses with a large portion rewritten in the margin. In working with Brother Hanna, we have determined that there are 12, not 9, 12 entire verses that were rewritten in the marginal notes of the 1611. In addition, there are 8 verses for which a significant portion of the verse was rewritten in the margin. Okay? So please consider the following categories of examples along with the accompanying analysis. Alright? So, we're going to look first at complete verse rewrites, and then we're going to look at partial verse rewrites. Now, here is the first one. 1 Samuel 3:7. Alright? Now, I don't know, do I need to read the whole verse?
No.
Or can we just observe what's going on? What would you guys prefer? So here's the verse, verse 7, 1 Samuel 3:7. Notice you have two vertical lines. You come over here, and notice it says, or thus did Samuel. So if you read the entirety, if you guys look at your handout, you'll see that I gave this to you. So the verse reads in the text, now Samuel did not know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed to him. That's what the text says. The margin says, or thus did Samuel before he knew the Lord and before the word of the Lord was revealed unto him. So is it giving you an alternative English rendering for the entire verse? Yes or yes?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, all right, good. We got that right, all right? Then notice my note, though, underneath that. In this case, the Geneva Bible, so the Geneva reading, thus did Samuel before he knew the Lord, and before the word of the Lord was revealed unto him. So this marginal option, or rewrite here, is exactly identical to what? The Geneva Bible. Okay? Let's go to the next one. 1 Kings 19:25. So I'm just going to read, rather than reading off the screen, I'm just going to read underneath this example, okay? So the verse reads, Hast thou not heard long ago how I have done it of ancient times? I have formed it. Now I have brought it to pass that thou shouldest be to lay waste spent cities into ruinous heaps. That's what the text says. Or, hast thou not heard how I have made it long ago and formed it of ancient times? Should I now bring it to lay waste and fence cities to ruinous heaps? So, is there an alternative English rendering for the entire verse in the margin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next one.
Brian, I got Second Kings.
What did I say?
First.
I meant Second.
Okay.
I can't talk, so.
Okay.
Job 19:26. The text says, and though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. Or, after I shall awake through this, though this body be destroyed, yet out of my flesh shall I see God. Okay? So, the one seems to be emphasizing something different than the first one. Okay? It's flipped around a little bit, but there's an alternative rendering there for the entire verse of Job 19:26. Let's go to the next one. Job 40, verse 24. The text reads, he taketh it with his eyes, his nose pierceth through snares. The margin says, or will any take him in his sight, or bore his nose with a guinea? That's pierce him through with a, it's talking about the same thing, but it's saying it what?
Different.
It's saying it different, alright? Look at Psalm 120 verse 3. The text says, what shall be given unto thee, or what shall be done unto thee, thou false tongue? Margin, or what shall the deceitful tongue give unto thee, or what shall it profit thee? So, like, so these are examples, guys, where the whole verse is what? Given an alternative in the margin. Not just a phrase or a word or a section, but the whole verse. Psalm 120, verse 4. So again, whatever we're going to say about this, does it do us any favors to ignore it?
No.
It does not, because it's not going to go away. And what happens then is this. If we ignore these things and we don't address them, then it just gives fodder to people who want to be critical of our position to come along, who have a little bit more knowledge than we do and easily gainsay what we're doing. So it doesn't seem to me to do us any favors to ignore this stuff and pretend like it doesn't exist. Look at Psalm 120 verse 4. The text says, sharp arrows of the mighty with coals of Jupiter.
Juniper,
sorry. Again, juniper, not Jupiter. Or, margin, it is as the sharp arrows of the mighty man with coals of juniper. So they're giving an alternative rendering for the entire verse. Go to the next one. Psalm 121 verse 1. The text says, I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. Very famous line from Psalm 121. The margin, or shall I lift up mine eyes to the hills? Question mark. Whence should my help come? Question mark. So, a little bit different way of saying it in the margin. Proverbs 17:10. The text says, A reproof entereth more into a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool. Or, in the margin, a reproof aweth more a wise man than to strike a fool 100 times. Okay? Proverbs 25:23. The text says, the north wind driveth away rain, so doth an angry countenance a backbiting tongue. Or, in the margin, the north wind bringeth forth rain, so doth a backbiting tongue and angry countenance. So, yeah. So this one is a potential problem. And by the way, we need to fix, that should be a colon, not a semicolon there, Sylvia, Proverbs 25:23, above the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. That one's a little bit of a conundrum.
That one in Job, too, about in my flesh I can see God. It just says, yeah, out of my, or in the margin it says, yeah, out of my flesh. So, shall I see God?
So, I'm just going to be honest with you about something. I'm glad you guys are picking up on this because I intentionally left that out because I wanted to see if you guys would pick up on it without me saying it. So, some of these, you could argue, are not necessarily what? Saying the same thing. Now, you could maybe argue by somebody who might know a little bit more about Hebrew could possibly shed some light on that. But there does seem to be a few of these that are maybe a little bit off, not quite saying it the same way in the margin, okay?
The first example you said was take the read out of the Geneva.
Yep.
Are the rest of these?
I checked all of them. Nope. But many of them are very Geneva-esque with synonym, with English synonym changes. Does that make sense? So many of them are very Geneva-esque in the sense of the way they read, but the exact wording has been swapped around a little bit. I'll say more about that in a minute. Proverbs 26:10. The text says, "The great God that formed all things both rewardeth the fool and rewardeth transgressors." The margin says, "Or a great man grieveth all, and he hireth the fool, he hireth also transgressors." Okay? Now, Isaiah 37 is an interesting one. Isaiah 37, verse 26. Notice the main text, okay? "Hast thou not heard long ago how I have done it, and of ancient times I have formed it? Now I have brought it to pass that thou shouldest be to lay waste defense cities into ruinous heaps. Or hast thou not heard how I have made it long ago and formed it of ancient times? Should I now bring it to be laid waste and defense cities to be ruinous heaps?" Now, what's very interesting, guys, if you flip back in your notes, go back to the example from 2 Kings 19. And notice that these are identical. Notice that these are identical. The main body of the text in Isaiah 37, verse 26, and 2 Kings 19, 25 are identical to each other. And notice that the alternative rendering in the margin at both of these are identical to each other. Now, I know you guys probably aren't going to remember this, but one of the couple of the passages that we've used to identify that preservation does not require verbatim identicality of wording is the 2 Kings passage and the Isaiah 37 passage, because they're talking about the same thing, but they don't use verbatim words. Okay? Look at 2 Timothy 2:6. 2 Timothy 2:6. The main body of the text says, "The husbandman that laboreth must be first partaker of the fruits." Or in the margin, "The husbandman laboring first must be partaker of the fruits." So you might on the surface say that's not saying the same thing, but if the husbandman is going to work, does he have to eat of the fruit in order to do the work, mm-hmm. and vice versa? So I'm not really all that concerned about that one, even though it's on the surface of it, it might appear to be not saying the same thing. Okay, so there's 12 verses that have complete rewrites in the margin of the 1611. Now let's look at the second category, which is partial verse rewrites. Okay, and there's 8 of these, if my memory isn't mistaken. Exodus 32, verse 29. The text says, For Moses hath said, consecrate yourselves today to the Lord, every man his son, and upon his brother, or in the margin. And Moses said, consecrate yourselves today to the Lord, because every man hath been against his son and against his brother. Okay? Then we have the next one, which is 2 Samuel 20, verse 18. 2 Samuel 20, verse 18. The text says, they were wont to speak in old times, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel, and so they ended the matter. Or in the margin, they plainly spake in the beginning, saying, surely they will ask of Abel, and so make an end. 1 Chronicles 21, 20. In the text, I don't know this guy's name. And Orne turned back and saw the angel, and his four sons with him hid themselves. Or in the margin, when Orne turned back and saw the angel, he and his four sons with him hid themselves. Okay? So there's a possibly different spelling there and just a little different word order on that one. We could go to Psalm 89:18. The text says, the Lord is our defense, and the Holy One, the Holy One of Israel is our King. The margin says, our shield is of the Lord, and our King is the Holy One of Israel. So, shield versus defense. Obviously, a shield is a defensive weapon. Again, you could decide for yourself what you make of that. Psalm 140, verse 11, the text says, and now notice this one is marked with a dagger, okay? The text says, evil speaker, be established in the earth, evil shall hunt the violent man to overthrow him. And then notice the Hebrew now, so this one is telling you it's a more literal Hebrew, okay? A man of tongue, or an evil speaker, a wicked man of violence, be established on the earth, let him be hunted to his overthrow. So they're saying that is a more literal Hebrew rendering of the text, using the dagger. Go to the next one, Psalm 141, verse 5. The text says, let the righteous smite me, it shall be a kindness, and let him reprove me, and it shall be an excellent oil, which shall not break my head. Or in the margin, let the righteous smite me kindly and reprove me, let not their precious oil break my head, etc. Jeremiah 18:14. The text says, the snow of Lebanon which cometh from the rock of the field, or shall the cold flowing waters that come from another place be forsaken? Or in the margin, my fields for a rock or a snow of Lebanon, shall the running waters be forsaken for the strange cold waters? And then the last one is Amos 2:13, and we should have enough time then to get into the analysis before we leave. Amos 2:13, the text says, I am pressed under you as a cart is pressed to the full of sheaves. Or, in the margin, I will press your place as a cart full of sheaves pressed. Okay, so let's look at the analysis here before we run out of time. So the above, so I'm on the bottom of page 18. The above subsections survey 20 verses for which there was a complete or partial alternative English phrasing provided in the margin of the 1611 by the King James translators. While not possessing verbatim identicality of wording, now watch what I said here, the vast majority, didn't say all, I just said what? The vast majority of the alternative English phrasings found in the margin rarely contain meaningful substantive differences with the main body of the text. A few examples are not as clear-cut and require further study to make a definitive determination. In the case of 1 Samuel 3:7, the alternative English translation provided in the margin of the 1611 is an identical match with the Geneva Bible. After checking all 20 of the verses presented above against prior English Bibles, 1 Samuel 3:7 was the only one that was an identical match. That said, some were very similar in sense and structure to the Geneva Bible, while possessing synonymous word changes, which is what I said to you a moment ago, Amy. Our friend and fellow researcher, Christopher Yetzer, checked some of the 20 marginal notes identified above against a range of other potential sources and uncovered possible influences upon the King James translators from the Italian, French, Syriac, and LXX translations, as well as the Book of Common Prayer, which included Coverdale's rendering of the Psalms. While more work needs to be done to corroborate Brother Yetzer's preliminary findings, their ultimate veracity would not be surprising given the following statement from Miles Smith in the preface, quote, "Neither did we think much to consult the translators or commentators, Chaldee, Hebrew, Syrian, Greek, or Latin, no, nor the Spanish, French, Italian, or Dutch. Neither did we disdain to revise that which we had done and to bring back to the anvil that which we had hammered, but having and using as great as helps as were needful, and fearing no reproach for slowness, nor coveting praise for expedition, we have at length, through the good hand of the Lord upon us, brought the work to pass that you see." So did they look at Chaldee, Hebrew, Syrian, Greek, Latin, Spanish, French, Italian, or Dutch?
Yes.
Okay, that's what they said. So, bottom of the page. In the absence of compelling evidence to the contrary, it is best to view the main text of the AV as containing the correct reading of choice in the minds of the translators. Put another way, the marginal readings are reflective of the translator's intellectual honesty in noting plausible alternative English what? Translations. Given the fact that this is... So, let me start over. Given the fact that this only occurs for 20 verses in the entire canonical text, it could reflect verses for which there was some disagreement among the translators as to how the text should read in English. If this is the case, the main text would reflect the consensus of the translators, while the margin captures an alternative translation advocated for by the minority. Now let's just stop there just for a second. How many of you think that they all agreed 100% down the line every time about every verse?
No.
I don't think that's the case. Thus, the margin. Okay? Moreover, in these cases, so in the cases where there are alternative renderings in the margin, moreover, in these cases, it seems that the marginal readings tend to be more literal translations of the Hebrew and Greek than what is in the main body of the text. While there is admittedly a certain amount of speculation in this analysis, what is clear is that the translators use the margin to, quote, show their work. Okay? So in the next lesson, we'll be looking at another of the remaining two categories of marginal notes that we did not have time or space to cover in this lesson, and that's textual variants and alternative textual readings. So, anybody have any comments or questions? So look, what I just did is my best attempt, at least at the moment, based on the information I have, to, number one, call your attention to a textual reality, and number two, give you what I think is the best plausible explanation for why it is that way. I don't think we do ourselves any favors by pretending like this stuff doesn't exist, and if somebody has a better explanation for why it is the way it is, I would love to hear it, and I'm open to discussion on the matter. Okay? The number of verses for which this applies is, as far as I can tell, is 20 verses in the entire canonical text of the Bible, Genesis through Revelation. That's, compared to the total number of verses, is that an exceedingly small percentage for which this occurred. Okay? Anybody else? Anybody with any comments or questions before we leave? Now look, guys. Some of you might be sitting here and you're like, why did you do this? It's quite possible that the reason I did this is, number, yes, it's for you, but I have in mind what I know is going on out there in cyberland on this issue. And for me to go through this and not talk about this would be a massive hole and blind spot in our conversation about this. I understand it's inconvenient. I understand that some people are going to be upset about it. But I would just say to them, if you have a better explanation than the one I just gave, I'd love to hear you. I'd love to hear it. Okay? Because we can't get around the fact that this is the case. Okay? Anybody have any comments or questions?
Will you be discussing the major differences, I guess, between 1611 and, say, 1769?
So, eventually. Because that's another issue that's out there, and there's a lot of misconceptions about that issue as well. I don't want to say anything more about that at the moment, but yes, I will. I do plan on talking about that. And that gets into the printed history of the text. As the text is printed, things come up that are interesting, I'll just say that. And later editors do impact the text. To me, that's just a fact. So we'll talk more about those things later on, okay? But anyway, for the time being, I appreciate your attention. Next Sunday, we're going to look at this next category, and that is marginal notes where they are noting a variant reading or textual variant, and we'll look at that.